Hold on.
What? Am I too squeaky?
Nah, I'm sure you can hear it on my end. Margot's blowing her nose and sounds like farts.
I couldn't hear it. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that you farted on the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, Gus over there, returning as well, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And hey, we're back. We're not dead. We're alive. We survived. We looked into the Ark. We didn't keep our eyes shut. And here we remain. We chose wisely. We kept the one stone from Temple of Doom. I don't know. I don't watch that movie that much, but you know, and we got all 9 crystal skulls, and we're back. We're there. Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, how you doing over there?
I'm back. Go, Web, go. I'm back.
I love
away, tally ho.
That. I'm just gonna say it. We've yeah. tried 3 times recording this, yeah. and the first time it got deleted. The second time we stopped because Gus made the point that we were kind of referencing literally just the fact that we had already recorded, and we just needed to do it fresh. The third time, Gus did the song. Well, that's the third time he's done the same song. So Gus is doing fresh. It's same song all 3 times.
But damn it, it's true. We're here.
Now you just gotta sing the you could have at least done like, now Jason's back. He's the man behind the mask.
That rocks hard.
That is a good song. That's bring back the 70s and 80s slashers.
Campy style.
It will, you think?
Yeah, I think there's some love for it. Everything comes back.
Around. We're off topic, but you know, this is just a life update episode. But I was watching the news today, and over here in the Pittsburgh, there's actually a thing you can do. You can go to an event that's at this house, this big mansion house, but you can partake. It's like not a live theater. That's a wrong way of saying it, but it's you partake in a slasher. Like there's a serial killer, like in the house, and like he can like. Kill, quote unquote, kill you, and you have to like survive the scenarios. And it's kind of interesting.
Like, I like that, movie. And I don't like that.
Yeah, it seemed interesting. It was on the news today. But anyways, that's besides the point. We're back here, the Brothers Movie Factory, and that with honors, sir, and at Pittsburgh.
Indeed. We've been gone for over 5 months now, and our last episode was December 24th of last year, and around that time we were trying to figure out what our flow was going to be going forward. Things have been changing. I believe it was around October things kind of started slowing down. We weren't doing 4 episodes a month anymore. It was becoming more like 2, if not 1. And we'll explain those reasons why here in a moment, but certainly at the tail end of last year, that was kind of what was happening. But then into this year, January, I had some things going on, which we'll get into, and then you did as well. But even more recently, you've had some big things occurring that have caused life to change in a big way, and we're just trying to let you find your routine, your personal routine. And then, hey, I mentioned, now that you've I think you got it. If you do, why don't we start recording again? Because this has been our outlet for many years now, our creative outlet. It's also our time to him, my brother and I, to get together and talk and discuss movies and, you know, the symbolism of it, or make jokes about it, or even just share nostalgic memories of different movies and things we love and that nature. So
is that what INAT stands for? in that nature.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think it's and that, but
it is. It's just lazy.
I almost like it better if it was in that nature.
And that is
in that nature.
it can be for us.
We're sophisticated Pittsburghers.
Yes, you do say
indubitably.
You say in that nature quite a bit in your vernacular personally, so maybe an at could be that for you.
Indeed, Bill.
So,
Yin's going down to the castle to kill the beast.
And, come on down and have sex.
Sex and Bien hunting.
So, way back when, over 4 years ago, or about 4 years ago, rather... Ben and I would just be doing what we're doing now, just chit-chatting about movies, and it got to the point where we're like, hey, why don't we record this, put it out in the ether, and see if anyone else likes to listen along the way, and some people have, and some people have reached out and been like, hey, where have you guys been? And we're back, baby. But where have we been? And that's what this episode's kind of about. And I'm going to start with you, because you've had the most significant life change and definitely a reason to not necessarily be recording. What have you got going on over there?
So in my household, we, for leading up to, our hiatus here, the wife was pregnant, and so we were, prepping for a baby's arrival and also, just taking care of the wife. And then we also have a dog that has some behavioral issues, so also maintaining a household with a crazy dog sometimes and lots of other things. So it was very hectic, stressful time, and so I had to take the podcast duties and put them behind the dead guy duties and the other duties, and get some new duties. That was a really good Nacho Libre pull.
That was good.
I'm very proud of myself for it. But anyways, I had to get everything ready, and the podcast kind of went by the wayside. And just a couple weeks ago, my daughter was born, happy, healthy, baby girl, and everything's going well with her. But it's definitely an adjustment, because now it goes from a pregnant wife and a dog with some behavioral concerns in the house and stressful situations, and that entails, to now having a wife that's recovering, and then a baby and a dog and all sorts of things going on. So definitely had some getting used to different things, getting in the swing of things. I'm pretty sure like 2 or 3 days after my daughter was born, I was talking with Gus on the phone, and pretty sure I was like saying something about the baby, and you were like, this is, I think, how our conversations are going to go now. Like, you used to be like, oh, I played this game or watched this movie last night. Now it's going to be like, oh, I did this with the baby last night. And I was like, probably. But actually, I don't think, because as Gus said, I kind of found my groove. The wife and I are a good team in that we came up with a good kind of formula to maintaining, sleep as well as taking care of the baby. So I take the night shift. I stay up until 3 a.m. and then swap off with her. And she wakes up at 3 and just stays up. And then I go to bed at 3 and wake up about 8, 9 o'clock. So I've actually found a nice groove at night to, while she's sleeping, to continue doing different things, whether it be play games, watch movies, all while watching her, reading books, getting back into reading. And so it's all been kind of finding my groove and kind of getting into a routine once again, and finding time to do the things that we do for the show, and just finding that time. Now, while mine is definitely stressful at a major life-altering event, your reasoning was probably in terms of, like, literally not being able to record. Like, we could have recorded, but it wouldn't have been the same. It would have been much different. There would have been a lot of caveats to it. Yours was very altering in that it definitely took you away from even where you would normally record altogether.
Yeah, sure, sure. So leading into this year, I took the step and I auditioned for a show. I did some acting, and I got the lead role in a production of The Crucible. Now, for you theater people out there, you book readers or you movie watchers who have experienced The Crucible, you know it's not a barrel of laughs. It's a very intense, emotional show. I auditioned and I got the role of John Proctor, and this production was not local, and it took me a couple hours away, and I'd be gone for days, weeks, basically on end for about 3 months, doing the rehearsals and prepping for the shows and, you know, all sorts of things. So during this time, I was definitely unavailable to do any kind of recording because I wasn't even watching movies, really. I was so focused on this production, and just so far away and just so, like, mentally and physically and emotionally occupied. And then by the time the show did wrap up, that's when you guys were in baby mode over there, and it was coming any time, so it just wasn't the right time to jump back into recording and such. But, you know, doing the show, although I said it was pretty occupying and stressful in those ways, it was still a very significant experience in my life. I got to rekindle a lot of close friendships. I got to make new ones that will be lasting ones. And just getting back into acting and creating and thinking on that level has been so important to me. 'Cause it was something I'm still very passionate about, but something I used to do. It had been over 12 years since I had done any stage acting. Now, granted, those were high school things. This was the first, like, real big thing I've really ever done. Certainly the most lines I ever had to memorize for anything. Now, I did movies and things in college and acted in them, whether it was my own or other people's, but those are like film scripts, so you just really have to memorize a line at a time and then record, and, you know, so that was a different experience. So going back to this and doing a show like The Crucible, and my character had, I believe, the most lines in the entire show, and I'm awful at memorizing lines.
That's funny, I never knew that, actually, until you mentioned it in our first recording of this. It was like, oh, you're not good at that, because that's the one thing that I consider myself good at, is I can memorize things like lines and, like, lyrics very quickly.
Well, you know, I've drank a lot of alcohol over the years.
Yeah, affected that lobe of the brain.
Yeah, I don't even remember what happened yesterday. I was hungover.
My hair.
Yeah, but anyway,
you're that. What's that? Ralph Wiggum, the police chief's son.
Yeah, Ralph Wiggum.
Does he, like, poke his nose or something? He goes like, I forget math. Or something. I forget that joke. I know that happens.
Sounds about right. But, you know, doing this show, not only was it important for me and significant for me, I used to work at that theater. And, you know, the people involved there have been doing shows in that building for over 25 years. And even prior to that, the people, because this group chose that building 25 years ago to start doing shows there. They were doing shows well before that, so technically it's been around for like 60 years. And in that theater's history, this show was one of the best-selling plays they've ever done, which was cool. Usually they do musicals and things, and those always sell well. It's the plays that kind of either, you know, don't make their money back or just barely do, but some have sold very well. This was one of the best-selling ones, which was interesting because it's a really heavy drama in this little town, and they're doing community theater, so they were concerned that it wouldn't sell. And it did, very, very, very much so. Word of mouth helped, because it was a great production for that area especially, not, let alone anywhere else. So a lot of people came from, not just locally, but people came from like Ohio and Maryland and Virginia. We had people travel to come and see the show. I almost had someone come from India to see the show. From my work, they were in town in Pittsburgh and heard that I was doing a show, and they're like, oh, maybe I'll come. And I was really pushing for it, but they didn't. Anyway, so that was great to hear. But like I said, in this theater's 60-year history, well, what I'm about to say, it's kind of hard for me to say, but it's for the sake of the show, so I'll do it. I don't take compliments very well. Usually, like, someone says, like, hey, you did a great job. I'm like, you're a liar.
Stop it.
Yeah, like, I'll make a meal for somebody, and it could be this delicious meal, and they could taste it and be like, hey, this is really good. I'm like, you son of a bitch, you fucking liar. Spit it out.
You are that Family Guy meme. The men, we don't know what you did, but you're just the opposite. You, like, someone would be like, yeah, I loved it, and then you jump out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but it was said to me by many people. It was said to other people within the theater that my performance was one of, if not the best performance they've ever seen on that stage. So take that how you will.
I told you, I'm unnecessarily critical of things. For someone who is immensely, I don't even know how to put it, socially anxious, a socially anxious person like myself, as well as someone who has done musicals but has odd stage fright, I don't know. I am, like, weirdly critical of things. Like, I have no right being as critical of things as I am when it comes to plays and musicals. And I would watch that, and I was like, that was about as good as it could have been. Like, I don't think there's any show that could have been any better done than that was done, that whole production. I'm pretty sure I said that right away. And then you proceeded to tell the other actors and actresses involved. And they're like, he's very critical. He's Roger Ebert of film, yeah. Or of, not film, he's Roger Ebert of exactly what Roger Ebert does. He's the Roger Ebert of plays and musicals.
Yeah. I built you up in that way prior to you coming to see it. I explained you're unnecessarily critical of shows, because you like what you like, so you will critique how you will, and you're just a person, right?
But I'm not critical of other things. Like, usually, like, I'm like, that show was fine. That anime was fine. That movie was fine. Like, it's very, but for some reason, like, plays and musicals, I'm like, no.
I think it comes from a place of putting yourself in there. Probably. You can't put yourself in an anime. You're not going to put yourself into Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that. Just Boba a random Fett. Example. Yeah, but like a play, whether it's a high school production or a community theater or even a Broadway, like your brain just wants to go there because you've done it and you spent a lot of time living in that headspace. But I was going to say, you're just a person, like, no one fancy other than you got Brothers Movie Factory. But as a human being, as an entity on Earth, I see people's opinions significant in that regard. So if someone's like, this is my favorite thing of all time, I'm like, wow, that has some merit. Yeah, so you saying that the show sucks or the show's great, like, I'll take that with as it is.
Yeah. No, it was extraordinarily good. And even so, though, like, I would never do that either. Like, I wouldn't go back to doing plays or musicals ever again. I know you told the director of this play, you're like, oh, Ben will do a show with you, and I'm like, fuck no. I will never get it back up there. And I enjoy doing that things. I have an odd social anxiety where I'm better in front of a crowd than I am in front of like two people.
Yeah. You never know. I was going to say it might bite you again. I didn't want to either until I started working there in like 2015. And like while I was around it, I wanted to always do a show. But because of my job there, there was no way I'd ever have been able to be in a show and do what I had to do. So, and then I left and I went and did, you know, DirecTV work. And then from there I went and I'm like a software engineer now. And or developer rather, and that creative side of expression, I guess, has been void. So it was time, and my job allowed for it, and it was the right show because I wouldn't just do it for anything. And a lot of people were like, "Why didn't you do something in Pittsburgh? Why'd you go all the way over there, like back where you used to work and stuff? Like next time we'll get you doing something more local." I'm like, that wasn't it either. It's not that I wanted to act. It's I wanted to act there. Yeah. with those people. I wanted to do a show there with those people. One of my best good friends was the director. I've always wanted to do a show with him. Bubble? I think so.
Bubble was my best good friend. I couldn't just leave him.
And it was a funny story, but he told me this is probably 2020, like it might have even been late 2019. No, it was 2020. He told me, he's like, "Hey, not next year, not 2021, but early 2022. It looks like we're finally going to be doing the Crucible here." And I said, "I'm going to audition." So I started growing out my hair. And so for almost 2 years, I've been growing out my locks. I usually cut it pretty short, and now it's to like my mid back. I grew it out for that role.
Grew it out for your Raditz cosplay.
Yes. It was time to everything aligned, and I might do a show there next year too. We'll see. I have to plan some things out a little better. It was very difficult doing it the way I went about it, just because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
On like a personal level, next time I'll go about things differently. But then even as like an actor, I'm not the greatest at memorizing lines. Like I took it very seriously. If I had any free time, I was looking at that script. If I eventually I recorded the entire script, but except for my lines. So if I was driving or I had some free time, I'd listen to these recordings. And then when it was my line, which I didn't record, I could verbally say it. I'm going to do that if I ever do a show again earlier. So that was a game changer. Things like that. I had all these ideas going into the role. Like, I'm going to be so method. And I kind of was. You know, I got the role John Proctor. It's late 1600s. I was like, you know what? John Proctor would have a bush. So I grew it out. I was like, John Proctor would have long hair. I already had that because I was prepping for that. But, you know, I was like, John Proctor would drink like mold cider. I was going to make that. Didn't do it. I had thoughts of renting a cabin and memorizing my lines over weekend, not bringing anything, just the script. Looked up prices for a cabin. Decided against that.
So something about that gives me anxiety. It's not like the horror movie vibes that it gives me. It's the not bringing anything with. I'm a slave to technology, and like I would like at least take a Game Boy, have something in case you get bored.
I think I'd be okay. I say that, but then like, there's been times where I have something on my phone. Oh, it was like a video, and I wanted to show my girlfriend. So I hand her my phone, and as soon as I hand her the phone, and she's watching it, I'm like, where the hell did my phone go? I'm like looking for it because I'm like so attached to that.
My hair. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I know that I've been camping. We grew up in the woods, and I've been camping once in my life in a tent. And that one time I went camping in a tent, it was with Dad, and he brought a portable DVD player, and we watched Austin Powers. I'm like, this isn't camping. But still, it made it feel a little, like, better. I don't know. I'm a slave to technology. I'm like, I would need my Switch or something.
You know, I'd probably need something like that. I'd bring the script.
You bring Crucible, the video game. What would that look like? Would it just be a visual novel?
Yeah, it probably would, realistically, but I kind of want it like a Grand Theft Auto style.
Walk around slapping everyone.
Walk around accusing people. That's the whole game.
Sounds reasonable.
You know, I think I could do it in a cabin if I only had a script and something to watch, some form of media. And I don't need internet. I'm talking like a DVD player. Because I've done it before where, you know, we used to have the cabin. I've gone out there and only had, like, Supernatural seasons.
Yeah,
and
I just watched that. That's what I mean, though. Like, you were saying, like, just your script. Like, you know, like, there are movies that do that where it's like they don't have anything. Like, it was back Christmas time, we watched Jim Carrey's A Christmas Carol, and like that man has nothing, and that's just how it was. Like, they just didn't have anything. They didn't have TV. They just went home and went to bed, and I'm like, this is terribly boring.
And no wonder they didn't live to be very old.
No wonder you're extinct.
Yeah. But, you know, that was my life for the first quarter of the year, and figuring out, like, coming back and just reacclimating to normal life. And then by the time that happened, yeah, you guys were due for a baby, so it just wasn't time to get back to recording.
Yeah, and that just didn't work out.
For you spit listeners out there, you can't see, but I can see Ben's holding thine child. You can probably hear it cooing and cawing.
Well, it's not cooing and cawing, it's getting ready to spew. So, like, you're going to spew into this.
Yeah.
But I
guarantee no hurl. Maybe not guaranteeing that.
I mean, she's like munching on it right now, so... But definitely been an adjustment.
You know, while I was going to ask this question a while back.
She's like, hacking up.
That's good stuff. This is the perfect time to ask this question, though. I was going to ask, what has been the biggest change that you've noticed in your life? And I'm not saying, like, your sleeping habits, like what, maybe emotionally or life-wise, have you felt the biggest change in your life now that baby's, you know, sitting on your lap?
You know, it is. It's I've said this, and this will get oddly emotional and sentimental on my behalf. I'll tell all you out there. I know many probably know this. Those of you who have listened to the show know this. I've said this before on here that I am not one to cry, whereas Gus is. And so her being born, I did shed tears, which is very rare. And that was probably what I'll say, not me shedding tears, but in general, and I've said this to other people.
Yeah, what's been the biggest change in your life? I actually cried. I cried once.
Yeah, no. I've told this to other people, in, you know, talking about becoming a dad and different things like that. But it is an odd sensation of, at least for me, you look at, like, I look at her and you just know there's something there. Like, it's just automatic and you just already love that thing, that baby. And I was telling the wife that, and she took offense to it at first, but I had to explain it. I was like, it's weird because you just it's weird to automatically love something, to literally have that, like, love at first sight feeling of something. Like, and she took offense to that. She's like, you didn't love me right away. I'm like, well, you learn to love people. Like, you start as friends and then you grow from there and you become closer and closer and closer. And then you love them. You can have an instant connection, but you don't necessarily, like, full blown love that person right then and there, right? Whereas this was like immediate, like you see that that's your kid and it's immediate, and they have all sorts of things, especially for the guy that they say, like this baby 100% looks like me, like it looks like me as when I was a baby, it has a lot of my same features, et cetera, et cetera. And there are tons of studies that are like, why is that? And they're like, oh, it was to prevent the male from eating the child, or it was to prevent, or it was to show the male which child was theirs, because when they were, you know, going around screwing everything and having children everywhere, they needed to know what was theirs. But
I'm sure that was your thought too. You're like, oh, thank God this baby looks like me, because I was concerned if it was mine, and I'm hungry.
Yeah, I want to eat it. I ate a baby. It is that's probably the biggest thing, is it's just a weird, it's a weird feeling. Like, you can love a pet, you can love a significant other, a family member, and all those things, but you learn over time. Like, the closest thing would probably to that would probably be of just you would grow up or instantly have that feeling of like a loving relationship would be your immediate family slash your parents, right? Because you just grow up around them, so you just grow up loving your parents, right? Same idea. It's just, you know, automatically,
for the most part.
Yeah, I don't want to say that for everyone, but like for me personally, like that would be what I would say. But like, this is like, yeah, this baby was born and immediately there's just some kind of connection there that you can't see, but you feel it.
I think a similar example would be my first time seeing Interstellar Space.
You're like, I love Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
It's there. And it's that connection.
It's there. I wasn't there before, but then I saw that movie.
And then you read his Green Light book, and he starts talking about his hot wife, and you're like, it's okay, Matthew. You're cheating on me, but you don't know you're cheating on me, so it's okay.
Yeah. I'm seeing Interstellar, and there's just unrequited love instantly, and I shed real tears. Just like, it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I'd say that's probably it. And it is, it's, you know, like, yeah, it's weird. Because, like, you could look at her and see your niece, but then I look down, and it's, like, automatically, like, yeah, that's me. That's a part of me right there already. Like, I can just see all the details and different things. And there's something about that.
It's still, like, hard for me to put together. Like, Margot asks me all the time. She's like, what do you think? Or how do you feel? Like, that's your niece. Like, that it's real. It's here. I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a baby.
I'm like, that's a baby for sure. Like, I don't know.
Like, you want to hold it? Not really. But here, I'll take it.
You know, it's been warming up to me. It's just a weird thought, knowing that you have a child. I mean, it's weird even thinking of our older brother having, like, he has 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
I feel like it'll probably be one of those deals when I have a child someday, hopefully, that then it'll click. Then I'll be able to, I guess, relate. Yeah. Maybe that's my wall.
I've heard this from other people, and this has happened to me more recently. I've heard this, that upon having kids, when you see movies that involve sad moments with, like, parents and kids, you're, like, more emotionally affected by it.
Don't watch Lion King.
Yeah, I did already. I watched that in Beauty and the Beast, and I was like, no, Maurice! I have had that where there are moments, I can't give you a specific, I just remember it happening a couple times where, like, I would get, I not cry, but get the lump in my throat more so, which wouldn't have been there prior. It's more that attachment, I guess. That mm-hmm. would be the big thing. Now, I have told the wife this, that she looks like me, so she's going to have the wife's personality and just hate everything that I like. It's not like video games and anime. Be like, huh?
Well, that's
we're
just in how
they're young, though.
So that's just in how they're raised.
Well, the wife put on Mickey's Clubhouse the other day for her for whatever reason. I mean, she's less than 2 months old, but and I was like, she started crying. I'm like, this isn't what she likes to watch. She likes Family Guy and American Dad.
Yeah. So you played Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, and she started smiling.
I have my own personal nursery playlist. The wife's nursery playlist is like all this classical music. And then on my nursery playlist, let me read this off to you. It's called Ben's Nursery. Let's see here. Playlists. All right. I have Zelda's Lullaby. Summer by Joe. These are all bangers, too, by the way. Everyone listening, you should look these up. Zelda's Lullaby. Summer by Joe Hisashi. Is it Saria from Ocarina of Time? Saria's song.
Saria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mother by Joe Hisashi. River Flows in You by Yoruma. Ashitaka and Son by Joe Hisashi. Beneath the Mask by Lin from Persona 5. The Rain by Joe Hisashi. Laputa, Castle in the Sky Suite. One Summer Day by Joe Hisashi. Aerith's Theme from Final Fantasy VII. Shine of Eidos from Trails in the Sky 2. And Dearly Beloved from Kingdom Hearts. So video games and anime.
And you also have on there One Winged Angel from Final Fantasy VII and Girl in Bakia from Paprika.
I need to rewatch Ponyo, but you said Paprika.
And you can rewatch Ponyo too.
Yeah, good. They say
Hayao Miyazaki made Ponyo specifically for 5-year-olds, that demographic. The movie's for everyone, but specifically that was his mindset.
I really tried for like the first 2 or 3 weeks we got home with her. Like, the wife was in that appreciative mood of me where she's like, you can watch or do whatever you want. So I'm like, let's watch Castle in the Sky. And she's like, not that. I'm like, okay.
Catch her eye. And she's like, okay.
I did that with Princess Mononoke and it didn't. But that's also Princess Mononoke. That one's different.
That one's not an intro one for someone like her either.
I did that with Whisper of the Heart as well. She was sleeping one time. I just popped that on. She didn't really care for it either. It didn't help that she woke up. The part she woke up and walked into was when she's in the fucking cat world. I'm like, no, it's not what it looks like. It's a dream.
What I've been trying to do lately, I would say last month or two, is kind of plan out my week of what I'm watching. Not strictly. For example, last week was Terry Gilliam films. So if we decide we're going to watch a movie that night, it's going to be a Terry Gilliam movie. And then we looked at the list, be like, this one, this one, this one. And then we pick one. If we didn't feel like watching a movie, we probably watched our show that we're watching, which is Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah. Now we got Kenobi coming up, so we decided we're watching the prequels, Star Wars prequels.
How'd she like that last night?
So Margot is not a Star Wars gal. She's not a bang bang pew pew kind of person, as she puts it.
Those prequels are the definition of bang bang pew pew.
Yes, they are. She has seen the original trilogy many, many, many times, but she never saw the prequels. So popped it in last night, gave her like a little bit of a precursor of like my experience with it, but also the hype of that movie, the history of that movie, how, you know, Star Wars wasn't like, there's new Star Wars every month now for the last like 7 years. It was like 1983 was the last Star Wars movie, and between 1983 and 1999, there wasn't a lot of Star Wars media. Yes, there was comics, there were books, there were TV specials, like there was stuff, but not all Not a whole lot.
You want to watch, I'm sorry, this is a little bit of a precursor, or a sidestep, but you want to do our first movie back, you want it to be Jurassic Park 3, right? But we got Kenobi coming out, and I was like, oh, maybe we should do Revenge of the Sith. But then, as I said that, I was like, or we should do fucking Battle for Endor.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue.
That comes up this Friday, yeah, so.
I know.
But, or when you're listening to this.
Yes.
Yes. So go watch Kenobi right now. Anyway, so yeah, we watched it, and I know it's not her thing, but I asked her when it ended, I was like, what was your least favorite thing in that movie? I started with that. And
let me guess. Oh, all right. Like semi 20 questions here. Was her least favorite? Did it have anything to do with any of the actors or actresses, like them specifically?
Her least favorite thing?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Did it have to do with the effects of the movie?
No.
The campiness of the movie?
No.
Really? The plot?
No.
Being betrayed.
Yeah. She, as she put it, she's like, anything to do with the duck people. I'm like, duck people?
The Gungans.
Yeah, I'm like, she's like, the Gungans. I'm like, they're like frog fish people, if anything, but I get you. She's like, oh, they kind of look like ducks. I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong.
They got the beak. Not the beak, per se, but the, you know.
She could not stand Jar Jar. She couldn't stand any of the Gungans, because like anytime Boss Nass would talk, she's like, what the fuck did he just say? I'm like, I don't really know.
No one does. It's for kids.
Yusa have a life and debt with this and his and uh-huh. Like what?
You know, I never picked up in that movie until I was a little older that Qui-Gon fucking mind tricks him.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until last night either.
Yeah, you know, Qui-Gon just subtly mind tricks him there.
Yeah, she didn't like anything with the Gungans, and she hated
Jake Lloyd. So I'm saying something to do with characters.
Well, that was Jamie Lloyd. I almost called him Jamie Lloyd. Whoopsie.
Jake Lloyd. Mandel.
Yeah, she was like, he is awful, and she's like, I couldn't stand like the Yahoos and the Yippies, and she's like, it just felt like. It was. I was like, well, the movie was made for kids, and that was part of the problem.
She's like, yeah. Made the mistake of, because I actually saw in a thing recently that he was going to. I think we might have talked about this when we did this movie, but he was going to cast someone older, and he wanted to cast someone younger to show the innocence, and to really lean into that. But it would have been so much more impactful if he was older. It would have made more sense too, because like he's too old. I'm like, he looks young to me.
Yeah, he's only 9. Like, so what?
He learned attachment. I'm like, Obi-Wan in the Clone Wars series, like, literally said he would have left the Jedi Order for this one Mandalorian. So, I mean, he has kind of an attachment, too.
Yeah, they all have attachments. I just watched Attack of the Clones tonight. Mm. And Yoda's fighting Count Dooku at the end. And Dooku's like, this is just the beginning. And he causes that like big pillar to fall, and it's going to crush Obi-Wan and Anakin. Yoda was winning that fight, but he stops to save them. Therefore, attachments, right?
Yes.
If he should have just stuck to the mission, because they could not let Dooku live. They could not let him get away, and he did.
And
Yoda's the wisest of all the Jedi. It's just
feeling towards the prequels is, like, you're like Attack of the Clones, and I'm like, oh, I love that movie. And it's like my least favorite Star Wars movie.
It's definitely my second or third least favorite.
It's
but
so good, though. It's so good in a lot of bad ways.
I'll talk about that one in a second. Her favorite things about the first one were the obvious ones, but the pod race. She said her favorite thing was definitely the lightsaber duel at the end, which me even rewatching it last night, I was like, this is amazing.
Oh yeah. That Darth Maul moment of him igniting both lightsabers is up there in Star Wars moments, just of it happening. Music, the two lightsabers, and you're like, what the fuck? And
yeah.
The whole fight's great. Qui-Gon losing is like really well done, and Ewan McGregor does a really good job, like it's his acting and everything.
Yeah, personally, it's my second favorite lightsaber duel in all of Star Wars. It's a
cool setting too, like just a bunch of platforms.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a
cool setting.
It's amazing, and then yeah, Attack of the Clones. I have not seen Attack of the Clones in, so it might be almost a decade. It was when we did that marathon. Whenever that was.
You've watched it at, I think you watched it on like VHS, more recent than that, at the at the new house.
No, I almost did, and I said I thought about it, but I decided not to because I was going to fall asleep to it, and I didn't want to fall asleep to it. I wanted to watch it, so I didn't put it in.
Yeah.
It had been since we did that marathon. That was before 2015.
Yeah. I have, like, weird, fond memories with that movie. Like,
me too.
And so I think that's why... I mean, that's the reason I like all these. Like, I've told people before that the sequel trilogy will grow on everyone. And right now, the people like that really don't like the sequel trilogy, like, I enjoy them for what they are. I don't think they're perfect. But I think they'll slowly grow on me the more I watch them. Like the prequels did. Sure. But I tell people all the time that the kids that are growing up with that's their Star Wars, they will be in our shoes someday, 20, 30-year-olds, and they'll be like, oh, I know they're not perfect, but I love them because they're where my memories are. You know, they're the movies I got to see in theaters. They're the movies that I got to experience, the toys and the games and all that stuff.
I'm only speaking as an old curmudgeon who likes what I like, but I don't disagree with that as being a potential thing. Like the sequel trilogy will grow on people, like the prequel trilogy has grown on people, like myself included. But the only reason I want to disagree with that right now is the prequel trilogy, although not executed very well for the most part,
has a story.
The idea is what makes it so great. The concepts is what makes it so great, especially in hindsight, thinking of it like all together, it all makes so much sense and has some really great, not only ideas. The sequel trilogy is so all over the place and discombobulated and not cohesive at all.
Yeah.
So that's my gripe with it. But I'll ask you this quick question. I did watch Attack of the Clones tonight. I got surprisingly emotional at one point. It's not hard to do that in a movie. But I did have a tear, a trailer, running down my cheek. Like the birth of your child. What part was it?
Annie? Little
no.
Annie?
No.
Not Little Orphan Annie, then. One of two. All right. The end, when it shows, like, the Clone Wars beginning. Like, the ships are taken off, and there's all the soldiers, and it's this really epic shot of CGI.
Yeah, I was gonna say, once again, conceptually and ideal-wise, amazing. But that's my thought. I'm like, not a single thing here is real.
Yeah, you're like, look at all that video game. But it is really cool. The music's playing. Yeah. You're like, let's fucking go. It's definitely not the wedding scene. Unless that music gets you going, which I know it does.
It does. It does. It almost put it there. And maybe someday if we ever do Attack the Clones, we'll discuss it more depth, especially like some memories with that scene.
Would it be the speech he does? I killed them. I killed all of them. That one?
Yeah, not just the men, but the women and the children, too. They're animals, and I slaughtered them like animals. I hate them.
I honestly think that's Hayden Christensen's best moment in the entire show, or entire movie, like all the movies. Like, that's his best moment, acting-wise, delivery-wise, everything, and the music's perfect. Like, that plays the Darth Vader theme right at the end. It's like, yes, this is good.
That was it. That's what got me.
So good. And that's, like, Hayden Christensen, that's what he got the part for, was that right there. I do think, I watched that Vanity Fair interview, as I'm sure you did as well.
No, I've not watched it yet. No.
Very good, and you can tell that he loves everything like about Star Wars, and he loves Dawn. Most of the comments were like, "It's a shame, like seeing how much he loves Star Wars and how much he like really wanted that part, to know that he just got absolutely shit on his entire career and like the two biggest like movies he was ever in."
And that now he's got like a resurgence thing going where people appreciate him more, I feel.
Yeah.
And well, are excited for him to come back to Star Wars.
Look at it now and say, they don't think it was the acting ever. It was George Lucas's dialogue. Was the problem.
His dialogue and his directing, yeah.
It's like Natalie Portman isn't that good in those movies, but it's really not her. Even McGregor, I mean, there's a line and directing moment that I always think of in Revenge of the Sith, because I just watched Revenge of the Sith like 2 weeks ago, when Grievous is fighting Obi-Wan, and it zooms in on Obi-Wan's eyes, like right on his eyes, and he's like, "Oh, I don't think so." I'm like, "What?" That's such a weird, out of place shot/line. Like, but yeah, I love it. But yeah, I think a lot of it is that George Lucas's dialogue and screenplay aren't the best. But
yeah, I mean, this is my lineup for the rest of the week. So tomorrow, I got roommate Matt coming over. We're watching Top Gun, which I've never seen before.
Nor I.
Then Wednesday, watching Revenge of the Sith. Thursday, going to see Top Gun Maverick. And then I'm in a wedding all weekend doing wedding stuff. So, but that's my lineup for the week. That's kind of what I've been trying to do more and more. Because I like to watch a movie every day. Whether I finish or not, it's a different story, but I usually do. And then I fall asleep to one as well. So it's not hard for me to see a movie. Have you gotten to the theater yet this year?
Yeah, two times. I saw Scream. I saw Scream, and then I just saw Multiverse of Madness last week.
That's right.
Weeks ago, rather. So yeah, I've been, streaming services make it a little easier, but no, I actually, since moving to my new place and having a theater like 8 minutes from our house that's a budget theater, so it's relatively cheap, like I saw Multiverse of Madness for, I think it was like $8 total. The tickets were only $5, but I bought them online, so it was like a $3 tax or fee or whatever. But still, I like got the ticket for like $5, got a large popcorn and a drink, and it was like $18 total to go to the movies, and that's very cheap. So I've been doing that a lot more. But yeah, no, this year I've seen 4 movies, Scream, Multiverse of Madness, Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers, and The Batman.
Yep. That's a good lineup right there. My favorite movie I've seen in the theater this year was Everything Everywhere All at Once. I went and saw Cyrano. That one I didn't know that old story at all, and it really surprised me and got me emotional, so kind of pegged it up there for me. So that was my number 2. The Batman was right behind it, though. Really liked that movie, but there are a couple things that just made me go, eck, so put it to number 3. I don't know about the rest, though. I mean, I did enjoy Doctor Strange. I've enjoyed the Chip and Dale movie. I enjoyed the, I'm going to say Clint Eastwood. That would have been funny. The Nick Cage movie, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And I'm sure there's a bunch of others I'm forgetting, because I usually go to the movies every other week now. So those are the kind of movies I've been, and we watch a lot of movies at home. Like I said, we did a Terry Gilliam a-thon. We've been doing the Star Wars movies, and been watching a lot of like older movies too, like some Hitchcock stuff, which has been nice. But looking forward to getting back into the semi-swing, maybe like a every other week kind of thing of watching a movie and discussing it. We do have Jurassic World Dominion coming in early mid-June. I'm also doing some traveling around that time, so that's why I think our next Movie Factory episode shall be Jurassic Park 3. We've done Jurassic Park and Lost World Jurassic Park, so why not discuss...
First movie I ever saw, right? In theaters? No.
Lost World.
Lost World was. Yeah. And I remember seeing Jurassic Park 3 in theaters. And
yeah, we got a lot of good stories of Jurassic Park 3, so I figure we could discuss that one, but is there anything else you care to discuss on our little update video? If not, I do have a question for you.
No, ask away. I'm good here.
So, here we are. We are the Brothers Movie Factory. We talk media, games, movies, shows, but mainly movies. That's what birthed, hey, the Brothers Movie Factory. As you're sitting there holding your child, what movie are you most looking forward to sharing with that child when they're old enough to appreciate it?
So I've actually talked to the wife about this, because when movies end, especially when we go see them in theaters, we get in the car and I do what we did growing up, which is like our parents, they ask us what we thought on the way home. They talk to us about, you know, the movie, what they liked, what they didn't. Kind of, you could argue, I'm sure, I don't know if you feel the same way, I'm sure some semblance of that. You could argue that a lot of our discussions that we have after watching a movie, going to see a movie, stems from those moments of getting in the car, driving home, which we had about a 20-minute drive from the theater to our house, discussing the movies that we had just seen. And that's always how it's been, is watch a movie and then you discuss it. And that's usually the first thing I say to the wife after finishing a movie is, what'd you think? Or how'd you like it? Or what was your favorite part? I'll talk to her about it and I'll try to discuss it. And she did not grow up that way. Like, it was very much a, you watch the movie and that was it. You watch the movie and then you go home and you don't talk about it. You don't break it down. You don't discuss it. They just kind of watched them for entertainment and that was that, right?
And that so, sounds fun.
Yeah, I would very much like to, her dad, my father-in-law, is very notorious for calling movie theater trips expensive naps because he would just fall asleep during them. That's something that I would like to instill in her, is just to be able to discuss and talk about things when it comes to movies. So obviously, for me, a big one is Princess Mononoke. However, I know that one's not necessarily, that one's more like, I just want to show my favorite movie, but it'd be more, honestly, in the vein of, like, Star Wars. Like, I'd love to see a reaction of the, like, seeing all those things for the first time, Luke, I am your father moments, and doing it where they don't know the twist, right? Or even going through, I think it would be really cool to go through all the Marvel movies someday and watch all through, you know, up to Endgame and so on and so forth and see what's available after that. But I think that's probably the big ones, is like Marvel and Star Wars and seeing these events occur and like going back through and watching them. I was actually just listening to a podcast the other day where the guy said that he was doing that with his daughter. His daughter was older though. It was like his daughter and her boyfriend, and they were like in high school, but none, her boyfriend and his daughter hadn't seen any of the Marvel movies, and he like loved Marvel, and so he was like every weekend he'd have her boyfriend come over and they'd all sit down and watch a Marvel movie until they were done. And he said like they were blown away by Endgame with like everything that had happened, and they weren't really into it at first, and then they slowly like got into it the more they knew the characters. And I just think that would be a lot of fun. So I think that's kind of where I'm at. I've told you, I mean, by all means, if there's ever anything that you want her to see, be it Godzilla or anything like that, just bring it over. But yeah, no, I want her to be able to have her own taste in things, but I think you form those tastes by being shown things. I mean, half the reason that you and I like what we like, even especially, you can probably draw our roots of like enjoying anime to, you know, things like having an opportunity to rent Totoro and then, you know, see Dragon Ball Z episodes at grandma's and different things like that, you know, that we necessarily didn't stumble upon on our own or were given to us or recommended to us or what have you. So definitely what I want to do is just kind of expose her to different things, see what she likes. But Princess Mononoke is the big one. Just because that's my favorite. Go from there. That one's obviously a much
no Rocky.
Yes and no. It's not. I will. That's one I will. But it's like not one that I'm like, oh, she has to see Rocky like right away. Like I draw a lot of enjoyment. It's just it's one of the reasons why I tell everyone to watch Attack on Titan is because all the twists and getting to live vicariously through another person for those moments. Now, Rocky's great, but you're not going to, like, I'm not going to live vicariously through someone for any moments in that movie. Like, sure, it's a lovely movie. I love Rocky. It's one of the best ever made, right? But, like, I would almost rather, like, show her, like, when she's old enough, like, Halloween and discuss, like, why it's so terrifying and why I like it and experience those moments because the movie moments are more what I would like to witness.
I was gonna make a joke like she's older, like whatever, 7, 8, something like that. You guys are gonna go on a trip. Like, hey, you're gonna go stay with Uncle Gus for a couple days. So come wave goodbye to you guys. I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna show you A Nightmare on Elm Street.
You're like, all right, see that storm drain over there? Well, we're gonna make a boat.
That'd be good. You know, it once again, it's one of those deals. I don't have that now, so I can only imagine. But I feel like the ones I would want to share would probably also be Star Wars, the original trilogy. Sharing those moments, like you said. But another one that I don't know why it floats in my head is like I got my favorite movies of all time, like my top 10, right? But even like outranked of my top 10, I don't rank these movies, are the Star Wars movies and The Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. That would be one.
I haven't seen The Wizard of Oz in so long.
It's like so timeless to me. I haven't either. I honestly think the last time I fully watched it, they put it out in theaters a few years back. I once saw it, but there's just something like, so it's the most watched movie of all time.
Yeah. It's also one of the oldest. I mean, that's not necessarily true, but it is an old movie.
It's definitely, it might be the oldest, most popular movie of all time.
Gone with the Wind.
Wizard of Oz is more popular than Gone with the Wind, I would argue, but.
Probably, yeah. I've found since getting, like, I mean, since she's been born, I've actually fallen into this, it's not so much movies that I'm excited to show, but, like, excited to get her into the cartoons that I watched growing up. Like, I've been watching through all the old SpongeBob. I watched through the original first 3 seasons. I've watched through 2 seasons of Fairly Odd Parents. Watched the first season of Jimmy Neutron. I watched through the first season of Codename Kids Next Door. I want to start watching Billy and Mandy soon. Like, the cartoons that I grew up with and enjoyed watching, that's more so what I want to share. Because, as you say, there are no good cartoons today, because there really aren't. And then when she's old enough, I'll be like, sit down, I'm going to show you a great cartoon. I'll pop on in the first episode of Attack on Titan. But, I definitely, you know, through and through, a lot of Ghibli movies that I'd like her to see, and there's a lot of stuff. I do want to see if I can't trick her into watching me play some video games eventually. You sit down and watch me watch Dad play Persona 6. Sorry, I can't go to your dance recital. I have to get this 10th confidant.
I'm trying to have sex with this anime chick.
Yeah.
let me ask you this. This is another closing question. Just talking video games. You know, by the time the child's old enough that, you know, you're playing some advanced video game stuff, is there a part of you that, like, let's say she wants to start playing some video games or whatever, Is there a part of you that only wants to expose her to, like, I'm talking old stuff first, so they can appreciate newer stuff, or so they can appreciate older stuff? Like me, I have that Nintendo classic, and I'm talking like Super Mario Brothers, Castlevania, like that kind of old shit. Like that's all you're gonna believe that video games exist. Or here's a Nintendo 64, and all you got is Banjo-Kazooie and Legend of Zelda.
No. I don't know why that actually drives me kind of nuts. Like, I listen to IGN Game Scoop, which is IGN's weekly video game podcast, and they talk so much about old video games all the time, like classic video games, sure. And like this week they talked entirely too much about pinball machines. Because the one guy's like a really big pinball guy. But anyways, it bothers me because that's not, to me, what I grew up with. That isn't what video games were to me growing up. Yeah, sure, the N64 was, but the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, I didn't grow up with that. So I have no nostalgia for it whatsoever. Do I have nostalgia for N64? Yeah, sure. But there are so many, you look across every generation, right? Every generation, there are so many fantastic games to play. So, you know, for me, there are no rose-tinted glasses of, you know, the N64 era was better than every other era. You know, like, the 360 era, I have tons of nostalgia for. I'm currently working on my 360 collection, and it's, like, ridiculous amounts of nostalgia for me. Am I ever going to go back and play those 360 games? Probably not, because I'd rather keep the nostalgia and the love there. So, why limit? I don't get the limitation of, like, oh, you have to play Mario 64. It's a shitty game in that the controls don't work, but it's so intuitive and you need to respect it and understand it. And I can appreciate it without playing it. So for her, it'd be more like, I'd probably just, yeah, if anything, a Switch would be the obvious choice, the Nintendo like platform. I would say a DS. But a lot of that's like, yeah, it would be more like handheld games and whatnot. That would be what I expose her to first. But ultimately, yeah, no, I don't buy into the whole, I don't buy into the whole classic games are, like, what you need to have some big-time appreciation for. Do I? Yes, I appreciate them. But a lot of times, I don't know, it's probably ignorant is the right word for it of them. In that, like, people be like, oh, this 2D side-scroller from 1987, one of the greatest games ever made. And I'm like, let's calm down. It's good. But it's not great. I'm not talking about Mario either, because Mario has more to it than just why it's one of the greatest games ever made. That makes sense. But, like, some generic platformer from the year 1990, someone would be like, oh, it's one of the greatest games ever made. Fantastic story. I'm like, probably, but there are better games than that. I'm sorry. It's, like, just the way games have come. So it's not that I don't respect them. I just don't, I don't buy into that. So for her, it'd be more like what she wants, whatever she shows interest in. That's how I was growing up. You know, I didn't beat a game for very, very long time growing up. I was like trying to think about it, but like, yeah, no, I never like really beat a game. And 9 times out of the games that I bought or got as presents, I did not beat because they were too challenging or difficult. To actually fully grasp or understand. So, you know, I had every Pokemon and, game from Silver on, and I didn't beat Pokemon until Pokemon Platinum, or Pearl version, rather, which, you know, was almost 3-4 generations after I started playing Pokemon.
By the time I was 8 years old, the only video game console we had in the house was a Nintendo.
Yeah. And so that's what you grew up with. That's why you have nostalgia for Contra. Like, you can go back and be like, I want to play Contra because you have nostalgia for it, and you probably think Contra's fun.
It's in my top 10 favorite games of all time.
And I look at that game, and I'm like, this game's old and sucks balls, to quote Donkey. no, it's not that I don't appreciate the games.
By the time you were 8 years old, in our household at that time, we had a Nintendo 64, we had a GameCube, we had a slew of handheld systems. Like, you had a lot going on. And then by the time you were 10, we had the PS2 involved and things like that.
Yes.
And that's what I said, slew of handhelds.
Yeah.
But like, even more,
like me personally, the DS was a big deal for me.
Even more recently, it was, I think it was 2020 at this point. Maybe it was 21. I played for the first time and beat Castlevania, and that's entered my top 10 fair games of all time. I love that game and hate that game at the same time. So
yes, it's also
perspective.
That's what I mean by like, I don't want to push her in any direction, because my view of games has also changed, like, over the years. Like, growing up, when I first got into, like, open world games and, like, life sims were my favorites. Like, I wanted Harvest Moon, and I wanted, like, Grand Theft Auto, and, like, go and screw around and do this, like, Ultimate Spider-Man. And then when I was, like, 360 era, it was FPSs. FPSs were my favorite. I wanted first-person shooters, and that was it. College, same kind of deal, and then slowly started changing until I got into JRPGs. And now it's like, yeah, you can play Castlevania. There's a story in Castlevania. There's a story in Contra. But it's those stories aren't going to grip me like a 40-hour, 50-hour-long JRPG. I was listening to a podcast the other day, Giant Bombcast is what it's called, and the one girl on it was talking about how she can't get into JRPGs, and she was naming all the things that she hates about JRPGs, and I was, like, checking off them as they were all the things that I love about JRPGs. Like, it's all menu fighting and building relationships and really long, convoluted stories. I'm like, yes. But I grew into that, right? So it's, you know, even, like, I just beat Xenoblade Chronicles, and that's a game that I tried to play in high school, and I failed miserably at, and I played this time, now that I'm older, and I beat it immediately, and I loved it. It was a great game, and I hated it when I played it in high school. So, you know, she'll have full range access to all my games. I have tons. So, you know, and at that point, we'll have these PlayStation streaming service and Xbox streaming service and Nintendo, whatever they're doing, and, you know, I will expose her to those games. Like, hey, do you want to play Time Splitters? But I won't be like, you can only play this Nintendo classic and you're gonna like it.
That's a good plan.
Here's these Lincoln Logs. This is all we had growing up.
Yeah. Well, you know, life finds a way, and so does the Brothers Movie Factory. We found a way to record once again and spit in your fucking ears.
Harsh.
So, yes. But here we are. I guess the three of us.
Yeah, kind of. Pissing her off.
See that? She's like trying to sleep. She's got those crazy eyes.
Yeah, that's what happens. But yeah, indeed, that does it for the show. Hopefully you missed us. Hopefully, we know we probably lost some people along the way, but we're going to get back into it here and do our best to stay on top of things. So with that being said, if you liked this episode, if you go back and watch older episodes, feel free to do so. We encourage it, but also you can keep up to date with us on Twitter. We're at the Bros Movie Pod. That's where we post updates to the show, links to the show, clips of the show, et cetera, memes Gus makes. And we'll keep you up to date on when we're dropping new episodes. We'll try to be a little more, especially now. Like, originally we had this easy, you know, every week there was a new episode, and, you know, we just post, hey, there's a new episode. Now it might be more like, we'll actually post updates like, hey, this episode's coming out this week, and keep a little more on top of the social media just in terms of letting you know when episodes are coming. But with that being said, you can also check us out over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook and type in the Brothers Movie Factory. You'll find us there. I like to make memes of what we're watching each and every week, and I post links to the things Ben didn't mention, but that's the spiel. I'm so used to being like the things, links Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audio Boom, Spotify, Twitter, and that, but I don't think you did mention Spotify, Audio Boom, Twitter.
I usually say, like, hey, if you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on our all our other
and
channels.
I'm like, yeah, I'm so, like, used to the swing.
Yeah.
But yeah, hey, now you know, go to Audio Boom, Spotify, Twitter, and that, and you can find us there.
Yeah.
About, Yes, indeed.
But that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until the following episode, until next episode.
Until next time. Brothers.
Hey, that's a sneak peek.